Okay, one of the issues that comes up annually is the issue of transportation. And we've got an outstanding speaker today, Jeff Paulson, who is with R&L Transportation and Global Logistics. Jeff's been in the industry for over 20 years. He spent 16 years with Werner and then another 4 years with Covenant in all kinds of positions, including logistics planning, operations, new startups. He opened up a whole new branch facility in Atlanta, starting with one truck and going to 125 trucks. We're pleased to have him come here today and talk to us about what's on the future for transportation and logistics. Jeff?
Thank you, Bob. Hopefully everybody got a chance to grab a drink, use the restrooms for the next 3.5 hours. I'll be captivating you with transportation insights. So if you didn't get a chance to use the restroom, here's your chance to make a break for the door. A couple of things that I learned early on when somebody was talking about public speaking and things you should never say or talk about. The first one was politics. So whoever said that obviously didn't listen to Mr. Crow's presentation. So the second one was religion. And with that, since Mr. Crow had the liberty of talking about politics, I thought I'd take just a few minutes to talk about religion very quickly. There was this young couple, and they were just engaged to be married, and tragically they were in a horrific car accident. They perished before they were able to get married. And so, being good Christian people, they were escorted up to heaven to the pearly gates, and they saw St. Peter. And they said, "St. Peter, we would never have the opportunity to be married. Could you find a priest and marry us?" And he said, "Absolutely, let me go find one real quick." He's gone, like, hours. He's, you know, they're looking at each other going, "What's going on? This is heaven." He comes back and says, "You know what? I found a priest, and absolutely, we can marry you, and you can live in eternity here in heaven." They said, "Good." And the guy kind of looks at the girl, and he says, "Now, you said eternity, right?" He said, "Yes." He goes, "Well, what would happen if we ever wanted to get divorced?" And St. Peter just looks at him with this incredulous look on his face. He said, "Did you see how long it took me to find a priest? How am I going to find a lawyer?" So, at any rate, my comedy routine is far worse than my presentation skills and the outlook that I'm going to present to you on transportation. We'll have time for questions and answers at the end, but the title of the presentation is a question mark. Is this another perfect storm? By show of hands, who remembers the George Clooney movie, A Perfect Storm? It's about 2000. The ship was, I believe, the Andrea Gale. They caught them finding themselves in a situation that they couldn't get out of. And so that comes into play with what we'll be talking about, what's taking place in the transportation industry. I do have to pay a little homage to the lawyers in the community with a disclaimer. R&L Global Logistics and its affiliates are in the business of providing, among other things, its customers with transportation, management, and consulting services. All information provided herein is based upon public information, shared in publicly disclosed documents, and has been compiled from many industry sources and experts. Credit has been given and attributed where applicable. The information should not be construed in any way, shape, or form to be the stated policy or stance of R&L Global Logistics or any of its affiliated companies. So I'm off the hook with my legal team in Wilmington, Ohio. Let's start off with a couple of industry facts. The transportation industry as a whole in the United States employs over 9.6 million people. The trucking industry itself generates over $372 billion in revenue on an annual basis. This would rank in the top 30 world economies. That represents about 81% of the U.S. freight bill. Rail, ocean, air make up the remainder of that. So it's a huge industry. Trucking itself handles over 6.7 billion tons of freight on an annual basis. Okay, big numbers. There are more than 450,000 U.S. trucking companies. We say that, why? Well, if you look at all the freight that they're handling, how much revenue they generate, there's 450,000 trucking companies. Very, very, very fragmented. Okay, over 70% of that 450,000 trucks that are out there, companies, have fewer than 6 trucks. I'm sure that many of the people in this room deal with companies that have 1 to 10, 10 to 20, maybe 1 to 100 trucks that you're dealing with on a regular basis. The information I'm gonna share with you, a lot of it is on the publicly traded companies, large US publicly traded companies. But the feelings and what they're seeing in the industry, the effects that are being imposed upon them are even magnified with the smaller trucking companies. We'll talk through some of those effects. So I mentioned another perfect storm. What is a perfect storm? It's a particularly bad or critical state of affairs arising from a number of negative and unpredictable factors. If you go back to what Mr. Crow was talking about, you'd probably say that we're having a perfect storm in our political world right now, right? In our geopolitical world. So we're going to look and see what that means in the transportation sector. So in order to understand where we're going, we always all need to know, how did we get here? So the movie came out in 2000, so let's go back to 1999 and 2000. In 2000, if you all recall the Y2K fears, all the computers in the entire world are going to crash because no one predicted how to go beyond 2000. Another thing that affected our industry, the used truck markets plummeted. Well, what does that mean to the people in the room? A lot of your large publicly traded companies, a lot of your smaller trucking companies that were buying trucks on a cycle, they weren't worth as much when they went into that, so they had to take massive losses. And in taking those massive losses, they also said, we're not going to continue to add trucks to our fleet unless we know that the supply and the demand are equal, are in equilibrium. 2003, you had fuel prices break the $1.50 a gallon. That seems like a long time ago, doesn't it? Yeah. Fuel is the dirty four-letter F word in all of transportation. Okay, I was talking to Bob at lunchtime in 2002 when I was working for one of my previous employers. That's when fuel surcharges were really becoming the norm. And I thought, man, we're going to have this licked and we won't ever have to have this initiative again. We'll never talk about fuel. Well, guess what? It's 2014 and we still talk about fuel. Okay, when that happened, an estimated 5,000 carriers left the industry. So you can see what's happening. Truck prices plummet, excuse me. So carriers leave the industry. Fuel prices escalate. Carriers leave the industry. In 2004, our great government that we've just talked about for about an hour instituted new hours of service rules. Okay, they changed the amount of driving time and the amount of on-duty time that truck drivers could have in a week and in a day. Also, fuel went to $1.81. So in a year's time, it went 30 cents a mile or 30 cents a gallon higher. In 2005, there were new hazmat regulations and requirements. And although a lot of your product doesn't require hazardous material certification and endorsements for the drivers, other customers who have that are now taking those drivers, so there's fewer drivers and fewer trucking companies that can pick up your type of freight. Okay? Fuel goes to $2.40 a gallon. 2006, we all lived through this, the housing crisis and economic recession. That was the start of it. Fuel goes up to $2.75 a gallon. That alone probably affected this industry, your industry, as much as anyone. Okay? People weren't buying new houses. They weren't putting mulch in. They weren't planting trees. Okay? 2007, another round of new emissions for trucks. Okay? The air that's coming out of the trucks has to be cleaner than the air going in the trucks. That's a cost to the carriers. And they're out there having to invest in that technology. And it's causing a negative impact on their earnings. Fuel goes over $3 a gallon. And then finally in 2010, which again is 4 years ago, the CSA came back and said, we need new driver and safety compliance measures out there. So you can see it was fuel regulation, fuel regulation, fuel regulation, all the way from 2000 all the way to 2010. Every year there was something going on. A lot of impact in our industry from a transportation provider's standpoint. So to go on, we'll talk a little bit about our most favorite course in college and high school was economics, right? Nobody slept through that. No one paid anybody to go to their course for them. We all paid as much attention as we could, okay? But the basic premise of economics 101 is the laws of supply and demand, okay? And if you look at the chart, and it's a little bit hard to see in the back, I apologize. From your left axis up is your supply, and from your right axis to the left is your demand. When we get to the point where the two points intersect, that's equilibrium. Everybody's happy. There's enough supply to meet the demand, prices remain relatively stable, and everybody's happy. As your supply increases and your demand is over there, prices continue to go up. Okay? If your demand is way over here and you don't have much supply, you're going to have a price increase. Okay? And that's what's taking place in our industry right now. Why? The available drivers are declining. A lot of it is based upon the demographics of the driver, and we'll talk about that. A lot of it, I've already mentioned, is dependent upon and in a direct correlation to regulations that are being imposed on the industry. Fleet sizes, we'll talk about this, they're shrinking. Pay for drivers is increasing, but it still isn't equal to the amount of time that they're spending out on the road every day. The quality of life for drivers, okay? Bob and I talked about this at lunchtime. I think you guys had this question posed to you a few years ago. But by a show of hands, how many people in here want to be truck drivers or have been truck drivers? Okay? Of those same people, how many want your children to be truck drivers? Of everyone in the room, how many want your children to be truck drivers? Okay? We have a need in our industry. We have a need in our industry, and we have jobs that are available in our industry, but that's not what we're pushing our kids to. We want them to get an education. We want them to do better than what we did, right? And that's great. I'm the same way. I have two daughters. I really don't want to see them out on the road being truck drivers, okay? But that's where we're at. That's what we face right now, okay? The economy, believe it or not, is slowly recovering. And with that comes new home construction. So there are more jobs that are available outside the transportation industry in construction, driving dump trucks, driving delivery trucks, or actually in the construction side of things. As the economy recovers, more manufacturing jobs will be available. Okay, so you know there's a better quality of life to do those type of jobs, maybe for a little bit less pay or comparable pay, but to have a better quality of life and be home on a more regular basis. So let's talk about what's driving supply first, and then we'll talk about who's driving supply. Since 2007, four of the top 10 carriers, now these are publicly traded carriers as well, have significantly reduced their fleet sizes. J.B. Hunt, probably everyone in here has heard of that company before. They're down 3,000 trucks from 2007. They've moved to an asset-light model in 2004 and 2005. They're looking at dedicated fleets, regional fleets, and moving as much as they can, either via intermodal or through their third-party logistics arm. Okay, and they're not bashful about it. They're saying, we don't make as much money in our over-the-road trucking. We're going to put our resources, our capital, and our time and investments into the non-asset side. Werner Enterprises, a company that I worked for many years, is down 1,500 trucks since that time. Their focus is on dedicated regional fleets versus over-the-road. Why? Because when you're running dedicated fleets, you've got static lanes that you're running. You have consistent revenues that you're seeing from your customers. You have consistent home time for your drivers. Regional fleets, shorter length of hauls. Drivers are home more frequently. Okay, better control over what's going on. A better ability to manage your maintenance costs. Swift Transportation is down 1,500 trucks. Their focus, again, is on the intermodal growth. They went out and bought a bunch of intermodal containers to support that. Covenant Transport, another company that I worked for, down 1,000 trucks. They've shifted their focus mostly to team and expedited. Okay? They see a niche in the marketplace that intermodal can't fulfill and that regional carriers can't give. So they're looking at long lengths of haul and putting teams on that and expediting the freight through that marketplace. So if you just add up those, that's a total of 7,000 trucks just from those four trucking companies that were down from 2007. 7,000 trucks. That's equal to the size of a $1 billion trucking company exiting the industry today. That would be like Werner Enterprises closing their doors and saying we're done. Okay? They've got about 7,000 trucks in their fleet. That's significant. Flatbed carriers, I think that's probably in this room, you guys use a lot of flatbed carriers, and that's the type of product your product moves on that type of equipment. They were hit really hard with the recession. If you think about what flatbed carriers haul, they haul materials, commodities for building homes, for building businesses, you know, mulch, soil, things of that nature. There are no flatbed predominant carriers in the top U.S. Trucking companies, top 30 U.S. trucking companies, okay? That their primary focus is flatbed. There are none, okay? The 2011 bankruptcy of Arrow Trucking out of Oklahoma took out 750-900 flatbeds. That's huge. That was significant in your industry. I'm sure that a lot of you have business that's in that marketplace and it had an impact on what you guys are doing and who you could use. In the last 18 months, the top 30 carriers have had zero or negative growth. And the number one reason for that is availability of qualified drivers. So when you talk about the supply side, this is what the owners of companies have said. And fortunately, this came from Transport Topics. But if you look at who these quotes came from, Dave Roush is the CEO of CRST. They have a huge flatbed division called Malone. Okay? He's been in business for 34 years, never seen the driver situation like it is. Typically, if there's freight, they can expand. We can't grow now because of drivers. For the second year in a row, we're projecting zero growth. Maverick USA is another flatbed carrier based out of Little Rock, Arkansas. We have plans to grow our fleet for the last 2 years. However, we have not been able to do so. Customer demand is strong, and we could increase our fleet size another 300 to 400 tractors based upon that demand if they could find the drivers. And then lastly, Melton Truck Lines, another large flatbed carrier. A significant amount of freight is being turned down. We've looked at acquisitions because we can't grow organically. That's fine, except for acquisitions aren't adding more capacity to the marketplace. It's consolidating the marketplace, okay? This graph just illustrates who's driving supply, and the answer is really no one, okay? There are no drivers. If you look at the graphic, estimated driver shortage for 2014 that we're living in today, 20,000 drivers. We could use 20,000 new drivers just to fulfill the open seats in all the trucking companies that exist in the United States today. If you extrapolate that out and you go into 2023, you're looking at over 200,000 drivers that we're going to need. Okay? That's a big number. Why? Well, let's take a look at it. You know, you're going to have non-voluntary departures. I talked about some of the regulations that the government has imposed upon us. It's called CSA. Okay? It's Compliance and Safety Act. Okay? The drivers now have a CSA score. And if they have any type of moving violations, that CSA score goes against their driving record. There's always been you can always see visibility of a driver's record in the past, but it didn't matter if he drove for XYZ company and came to Jeff Paulson Trucking. It didn't affect Jeff Paulson Trucking what his score was. Today, their CSA scores are a reflection of the company that they work for. So what we had in the industry was called churn. You could leave J.B. Hunt today, as long as you didn't do anything to upset them from a legal standpoint. You could join Werner Enterprises tomorrow and then work for them for 6 months and join U.S. Express, and you really never miss a paycheck. So we called it churn in our industry. The drivers never really left the industry. They just went to the next highest paying or what they thought was the next best opportunity. Okay. Now, they have a CSA score that if they're a bad driver, and they want to leave J.B. Hunt and go to Werner Enterprises, Werner Enterprises is going to say, I'm not hiring that guy. He goes against my CSA score, and the government's going to be checking my trucks. If I don't comply, I have the they could take my safety rating down. My insurance will go up. Okay, so we're not churning as much driver. There's drivers now that want to leave, but they don't have any place better to go. Okay, so that's your non-voluntary departures. You got your voluntary retirement. Okay, 37%. When I show you the demographics of the drivers, you'll understand why there's going to be a huge amount of drivers leaving our industry. And then you have your voluntary non-retirement departures, meaning they went to other industries. Add in there industry growth of a projected 36%, and you come up with needing almost 100,000 drivers in the next 10 years. So, you know, all of the trucking companies have recruiting departments. You know, former drivers, bonuses, sign-on bonuses, employee referrals, trying to find more drivers to come to. A poll from the ATA benchmarking guide was this. Is it that you can't find enough drivers, or you're not finding the quality drivers you'd like to hire? 88% of the respondents said, we can't find the quality of the drivers. It goes back to that CSA score. I don't want to bring them to my organization and bring me down from a safety standpoint. Okay? Here's another graph. Is your company currently having difficulty finding qualified drivers? This breaks it down into small carriers. 84% of them said, yes, we are. Medium-sized carriers, 100% of them said, yes, we are. These are truckload companies. Large truckload carriers, 94. So we're, you know, from 84 all the way up to 100 and then into the large LTL carriers, 94. So what's that average? 91-92% of all of them are having difficulty finding drivers. LTL carriers. My parent company I work for right now is a $1 billion LTL company that has Transamerica shipments. We can't find enough drivers. So what are we doing? We're reaching out to full truckload carriers and recruiting those drivers, because those are jobs that are going to be more accepted by the drivers. They're home more frequently. They're on scheduled runs. We didn't add any more drivers to the industry. We're just robbing Peter to pay Paul. Private carriers are having, 54% of them are having difficulty. We'll talk a little bit at the end about private carriers, because I think that's a subject that some of you have entertained with your own companies, private fleets. So where did everybody go? Did you ever see that commercial? Where did everybody go? I don't know. Where are they? You know, you're walking down the street, you don't see anybody or anything. Talking again about the demographics, it's an aging workforce, okay? We're talking about baby boomers. You know, it was truck driving at one point in time was a way to see the country. You know, it fulfilled that wild child, you know, the Dennis Hoppers and the see America and get out and see the whole country. And the glamour of that has quickly worn off. There aren't as many coast-to-coast carriers. There aren't as many providers that are letting drivers run wild, if you will, without being on scheduled lanes. It's just not cost-effective for them. Our demographics were predominantly male. Okay, there are very few female truck drivers out there. Why? A big reason, especially in the last 10 to 15 years, manual transmissions. Okay, we kind of laugh and we all kind of snicker. My daughters don't know how to drive a manual transmission. I have friends that are my age, and I'm almost 50, that don't know how to drive a manual transmission. Put that into an 18-speed truck. They don't know how to do it. Okay? And like we mentioned earlier, our company is pushing, and we as parents are pushing to get a higher education. And truck driving is a higher education profession. Okay? So that's what we're forced with from a demographic standpoint. Already talked about this, but our wonderful government and their increased regulations. The hours of service rules, we talked about this. They first were instituted in 2004, and as of today, there's still no final ruling on what that's going to be. Okay? 10 years later, and we still as an industry are waiting for somebody to say, these are the final rules, apply them and make them work. Okay? Some of it is our industry pushing back saying, whoa, you did some studies that didn't make any sense. And so, you know, those rules don't make any sense. So we're going through a little bit of that. But three things on there. The 34-hour restart, okay? That means if you've driven for 8 days and you've driven more than 70 hours in 8 days, it's mandatory that you have to take a 34-hour break, okay? What's changed in the last 2 years is now that 34-hour break must occur between the hours of 1 a.m. and 5 p.m. So it can start at midnight, but it can't start at 2, for 2 consecutive days. Okay? So let's say you got off at midnight today, start your 34-hour restart, and tomorrow after 5 a.m., you could go back and resume driving. Okay? If you miss the 1 a.m. cutoff, and you don't start your 34-hour restart until 2 or 3, you have to take all the rest of today off, all of tomorrow off, and then Friday after 5 a.m. you can resume driving. Okay, so that turns into a 52-hour restart. What does that mean? Lack of productivity, lack of utilization, more drivers than it takes to deliver the same amount of freight. Okay, that's big. No more split breaks. For those of you who've driven, if you arrived at a shipper and you were ready to get loaded and they didn't have the product ready, you could log that as off-duty, not driving, split the time, stop your clock, okay? And then when you were ready to drive again, you could log it as on-duty driving, and that hour or two or three or four that it took for the product to be ready didn't count against your duty time, okay? Today, you start at 6 o'clock in the morning, 11 hours later, you have to stop driving, 14 hours later, you have to be completely off-duty. So at 5 o'clock this afternoon, doesn't matter what you're doing, you got to find a safe place to go, park your truck, and take a break. Okay? Again, more regulations, less utilization of that equipment, less miles for the drivers, so they're wanting more pay, and it equates to the demand. Okay? The supply isn't there. We don't have enough trucks to meet that demand. The CSA implementation is, as we've already talked about, is eliminating available drivers. The churn's not there. People are saying, I'm staying where I'm at. I've got it good. Companies aren't letting people go if they're good drivers. They're finding ways to incent them to stay. Age restrictions. This is something you go back and forth of. Today, you have to be at least 21 years of age to drive a commercial vehicle. You know, some people say, some companies are at 22. Some people say, well, why not get to these people that are not going into business, not going to college, maybe not going to the military, and get them right out of high school. Again, show of hands, who really wants their 18-year-old child behind an 80,000-pound vehicle driving on the roads? Now, I trust my daughters, but I don't know if I trust them that much. But maybe 19 or 20 is a workable solution if they go through the right training. So that's something we're looking at as an industry. Where else are they going? Again, more or better options. The quality of life, more home time for less pay. Drivers are willing to do other things so they can go to their kids' soccer games. They can go to their kids' lacrosse games, volleyball games. They can spend more time with their families. That's why you're seeing a lot of them flock to the local, regional, and dedicated driving jobs. And then again, the non-driving jobs that have comparable pay, construction, manufacturing, things of that nature. So who wants to be a millionaire? We all do, right? Well, I would recommend don't drive a truck, okay? Own a trucking company if you want, but don't drive a truck because it's going to be very difficult to be a millionaire. Here's some stats on the demographics. There's about 1.7 million drivers. These are for heavy and tractor trailer drivers in the United States. Okay, 94.6% of them are male. The average pay is $48,000 a year. You know what they have to go through every morning? They wake up. They're in a different city that has construction, that has detours, that has weather, that has traffic. Tomorrow morning they're going to wake up in San Antonio. The next day they're going to wake up in Albuquerque. The same thing. Okay, they can't take secondary roads. They can't jump off the interstate and take the highway because the interstate's backed up. They get to sit there. Okay. Average age right now is 45 years. I'd say that's actually on the low side. How many of them suffer from pre-hypertension or hypertension? 87%. Why? That's a stressful job. Driving down the road with 80,000 pounds, you have a deadline you have to meet, you got a four-wheeler that pulls right in front of you, you slam on the brakes, you're responsible. If something happens and you get cut off, who's going to be blamed? Okay? The obese morbidity rate is 75%. Why? Where do they get to eat? They get to eat in the greasy spoons, the truck stops. You know, they're living an irregular lifestyle, meaning they're waking up and eating at different times every day. That's not healthy. If you read any health magazine, consistency in what you put in your body, the ability to exercise, things of that nature, that's why. Okay. So their life expectancy is the early 60s. Okay. And we're bumping up against that right now with the demographics of the drivers that we have. So drivers needed over the next 10 years is almost 100,000 drivers. You know, what are they doing? They're driving for hours in a cramped cab, where they end up sleeping. Their trunks are their houses, okay? Having to go for days without showering, possibly, you know? When they do get to the truck stops, they replace the fuel, but that's also a place where the grapevine and the rumor mill starts going, okay? What do? I drive a truck. Who do you drive for? I drive for these people. What do they pay? You know, so they're talking about different things. How's your work like? Oh, it's great. So what happens? They leave your company, they go to the next company. So let's talk a little bit about the demand. That's the supply side. The supply side is dwindling, right? So back to our Econ 101, supply is way low, okay? But the demand, if you look at, besides 2009, that's when we bottomed out. That's when the recession fully had its impact in our industry from a truck tonnage standpoint, okay? We bottomed out. Ever since then, every year, we've seen growth year over year over year over year. This past spring, we had one of the worst records in history, okay? Longest winter, major roads closed. It affected all of rail, okay? If you move anything via intermodal, and it was moving along the northern corridor into or out of Chicago or into the Northeast, it was affected, okay? And it's still being affected. Service levels are at their lowest ever from an intermodal standpoint. I was at a BNSF conference back in July, and they were still apologizing for the winter and saying, we're doing everything we can to make it better, okay? The economy is starting to be in a slow recovery. That means that there's more demand out there. There's more shipping opportunities. Okay? And again, the regulations have the impact on the demand. Okay? The mandatory break that I spoke about between 1 and 5 a.m. Well, let's think about that for a second. Not only do we hinder the drivers, but now we put them on the street at 5 o'clock in the morning, where if you're in a major city, Bob talked about this, Washington, D.C. Let's say you had to take your break outside of Washington, D.C., and you stopped in Northern Virginia. Okay? And at 5 o'clock, you finally get on the road, and you're supposed to be up in Philadelphia. Well, what cities do you think you're going to go through between Northern Virginia and Philadelphia to make your delivery? And what time are they on the road? 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, and you're there with everybody. Again, it's going to take more drivers to deliver the same amount of freight because of that congestion. This is really hard to see, so I'll just go through it really very quickly. So what are the constraints on supply? Driver recruitment and retention. It's a big issue. Okay, it always has been for our industry, but it's even more impacted now. Thousands of seats go unfilled to prospective drivers being kept out of the industry by government regulation, increased company scrutiny, and the lure of other blue-collar jobs with better lifestyles. Okay, number two, high levels of uncertainty on how the FMCSA changes will affect the day-to-day trucking operations. Hours of service, the 34-hour restart. So a lot of smaller trucking companies are saying, how can I comply and how much is that going to cost me to comply? Okay. Trucking companies, full truckload carriers, and LTL guys too, they're making the decision to allocate assets to dedicated lanes, regional type freight, because they can grab more revenue per mile from long-term commitments. They can get them closer to home, closer to their terminals where they can be serviced versus having to have them serviced out on the road, okay, at a dealership where it costs more. The last thing on there is a lot of opportunity to convert loads to intermodal, but as you, I'm sure, are all aware, not as much flexibility on the intermodal side, okay? In regional short-haul operations, intermodal really isn't much of an option, okay? For the long haul, coast to coast, absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit about how, even though it's not an option for regional, how it could be a possible way to bring capacity into the marketplace to support your business. Talked about retention and driver turnover rates. That's something that we look at as an industry. You know, you look back in 2005, 2006, 2007, we had a lot of turnover. But then when things really slowed down in the economy, 2008, 2009, 2010, not as much, okay? You can see now, when there's better options, that the turnover starts to creep back up, okay? A poll went out to, this is an ATA survey in September 2013, have you or will you increase your pay for your various driver groups in 2014? Small truckload carriers, 70% of them said, yes, we will. Almost 89% of the medium-sized truckload carriers said yes. 73% of the truckload carriers said yes. LTL carriers said yes. Private carriers said yes. I know that's something you guys are all feeling and seeing, and I don't want to give you the whole doom and gloom, and hopefully by the end of the presentation you'll see that there is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and hopefully it's not an oncoming train. What are rates doing? This is just here recently. Nationwide broker spot line haul rates. You've got the purple line over here is intermodal. Okay, you saw them spike up in January, February, March, and they've kind of gone back down. That's when the service issues were taking place. Dry van rates, obviously, early in the year, they tend to go up, but look at, since January, they've continued to climb, okay? Flatbed rates have been strong. That's just dictated by what's been going on in the economy. And look, they're going up. You guys felt that. Reefer rates, the same thing. Line haul rates for contractors, that's the spot market broker rates. Line haul rates correlate very closely. You know, you've got your van rates that are fairly consistent on a contract basis, but those are going up. This is the time of year that most of your dry van carriers go to the marketplace. They know that the demand is there. Peak season shipping is underway, and so they're raising rates. Same thing in your reefer and flatbed business. So the forecast, it's mostly cloudy. It's no picnic anytime soon. I didn't mention this earlier, but I am a Nebraskan, and this picture was actually taken. There were two tornadoes that touched down in a small town not far from where I grew up. And I actually was in that exact same, on that exact same highway the week before this picture was taken. So I'm very fortunate I wasn't there that day. I might not be here today. So let's take a look at the forecast. What can we expect? Capacity is going to remain tight through 2014 and 2015. Okay? Possibly beyond. So expect that. The demographics aren't going to change. The driver force is not getting younger. The regulations aren't going to change. Okay? But what we will see is the possible relief with an increase in foreign-born drivers, women, and minorities. Okay? Mentioned how many people know how to drive a manual transmission. Well, you know, the trucking industry is hearing that. The manufacturers are hearing that. The old adage was, I don't want to have an automatic truck because they don't have any power. That's been fixed. A lot of companies, ours included, are going to automatic transmissions. That will open up an avenue for more drivers to come to our industry and more people to come to our industry. Expect rates to increase. You know, wages are going to have to compete with non-trucking jobs. Okay, $48,000 a year is not enough for some of these people and the type of work that they're having to do. Okay, recruiting costs, because we have to go out and find more drivers to come into our industry, are going to continue to rise. So rates will increase. Period. And expect an increase in dedicated fleets and regional operations. And this is what we can look at as a possible solution here. What does that do? It captures that consistent year-round regional capacity. When we talk specifically about your industry, the opportunity to do a pop-up short-term dedicated fleet where you capture that capacity is available out there. Some of your larger companies, Walmart does peak season pop-up fleets, and carriers support that with just, you know, 2 or 3 months out of the year where they give them some additional capacity. Does it cost a little bit more? Possibly. But do you capture that capacity? Know that at the end of the day, your product is going to be at your customer? Yes. Expect an increase in third-party providers. True logistics partners bring solutions and capacity. Okay? My company does third-party logistics. We have over 8,500 partner carriers that are out there in various sizes and shapes and modes. Okay? I'm venturing a guess, but most of your companies might have one person, maybe two, in the whole transportation department, but they also do in other jobs during that time. Okay? How many carriers can they contact in a day? How big is your database of your carriers? Okay? So third-party logistics providers that are out there, and I'm not talking about freight brokers, I'm talking about true logistics partners that are going out there and finding that capacity, that have the relationships with the carriers, can be your friends. Okay? And expect the increase in use of intermodal. Maybe not in this industry, but where it's applicable, there's an opportunity. Keep in mind that constraints already exist. There's congestion on the rails. We talked earlier, Mr. Crow was talking about oil, okay? A good news, oil per barrel went down to $81, okay? We haven't seen that in 10 years. It's thank you, manna from heaven. And what does that mean? You know, why is that? It's all the fracking that's going on up in North Dakota. And what Class 1 mainline railroad has the only track that runs through North Dakota? Burlington Northern Santa Fe. Who's owned by Warren Buffett, who's probably one of the smartest men in the world, because he's like, what's this thing called fracking? Well, how do you get it out of North Dakota? A railroad. Does any railroad run through there? Yeah, Burlington Northern Santa Fe. I think I'll buy them. Anything. So the rich just get richer, but he's got great people around him, and he's from Omaha, Nebraska, so I got to give him props. But a lot of their capacity, and a part of their problem that happened in the wintertime for Burlington and Santa Fe, was they're diverting their trains and their locomotives to North Dakota. It's their fastest growing business segment. So why not send your capacity where the money is, right? So that's what they're doing. So there's constraints. Whether it's Burlington, Northern Santa Fe, whether it's Union Pacific, CSX, Norfolk Southern, or any of the smaller railroads, it exists. So is there a silver lining behind all the clouds? Yes. Okay. Certain geographic areas have more drivers available. Florida, Texas, California, Georgia, the Carolinas, those are the largest driver domiciles in the United States. If you guys have plants or operations in those states, there's trucking jobs available. There are drivers available. You're going to see some growth in that marketplace. You know, California is California. It's its own republic, and it's its own. It's eventually, when it falls into the ocean, and Arizona has all the oceanfront property, everybody will be happy. But you know, there's so many regulations that pertain to doing business in and out of California, even with drivers and wages and the human resources aspect of how many hours they can actually work, even if they're non-exempt employees or exempt employees. So there's so many different things going on in California that I could spend all afternoon on that. Carriers are focusing on dedicated and regional fleets. That means that there's some long-haul capacity that could be freed up, and or they can help you with your short-term pop-up dedicated-type fleets in the geographic markets where your plants are. Why are they doing that? Consistent pay, scheduled runs, consistent miles. That's what the drivers want. Okay? Like I said, gone are the days with taking on the coast-to-coast load from Fort Myers, Florida to Seattle, Washington. Those don't exist very often anymore. Okay? That's an intermodal move. What does the dedicated regional fleet do? It can help supplement or replace a private fleet. A show of hands, is there anybody in here that runs a private fleet right now? You do? How many trucks do you run?
30.
Having a hard time getting drivers?
No, we're home every night.
There you go. You probably pay more than $48,000 a year?
About 53 on average.
Yeah. That's what you're going to see. Okay, you're going to have to pay drivers more. They're going to get home every night. Can you grow that? Yeah, possibly. Can you grow that by another 53 drivers? Probably not. Okay. What do you do with your private fleet when they're not hauling your freight?
You only haul our freight.
You only haul your freight? You're in a fortunate situation. You know. So that's what we can do with the dedicated fleets. Intermodal is becoming more viable in more markets. We've already talked about that. What it can do is it can move long-haul capacity drivers. So we're saying that there's really no drivers available, but if we can put that long-haul freight and run it intermodally, doesn't that free up the trucks to run the regional, the dedicated, and the short-haul, the stuff that doesn't come around? Yes. So we have, as an industry, have to get a little bit creative and shift that capacity around, play that little game where you had the nine squares and one piece was missing and you had to line them all up. That's what we have to do kind of with our capacity. The key to that is having good forecasting tools, okay? If you don't know what you've shipped last year and what your growth expectation is for this year, it's almost impossible for carriers to say, here's how much capacity I can give you. Okay. Yes?
What does that do for the railroad, though, if the railroad's already, I mean, where's the capacity of the railroad today?
It compounds their problems. The railroads are investing a lot in double tracking where they can. If they can move it via container versus trailer on flat car, obviously, you get twice as many containers versus TOFC. So that's what they're looking at doing. They're looking at double tracking as much as they can in the congested areas. But it's just going to compound the problem.
We've seen a slowdown in our rail travel.
Service times?
Yeah,
yes.
As opposed to the year before, I just wonder how that's going.
It will. It'll continue to affect that. You know, when we were at the BNSF conference, you know, I think they had said they had already invested $5 billion in locomotives and additional tracking. And that's I think that's over the next 5 years, but that's part of the strategy. But it's exactly right. I mean, we're not building any new highways or interstates. We're not building any new railroads. So we are going to be, we'll still have that conundrum of supply and demand. Absolutely. 3PLs, I mentioned earlier, but they've developed broader and stronger relationships. If you partner with a 3PL, there's an opportunity for you to possibly find more capacity, keep your costs a little bit more in line. As I mentioned, you know, look at a C.H. Robinson. They've been around for over 100 years. A lot of carriers think of C.H. Robinson as an actual carrier. They have zero equipment, okay? So they're not a carrier. A lot of truckers think of C.H. Robinson as a shipper. They don't manufacture anything, okay? They're the greatest marketing machine in the whole world, but they do a great job of finding capacity when you need it. You're going to end up playing a lot of spot market games though when you're working with a broker versus a 3PL. As I mentioned earlier, they can reach more carriers than a single shipping department. Okay, so kind of in summarizing some things here, how do we weather this storm? And I came up with something I hope everybody can remember. It's a pretty easy acronym. It's SOIL, S-O-I-L, and I'm not really that creative. My daughter's helping with this, but so number one, support your local or support your transportation providers. assist with detention, driver delays, have crews ready to load and unload. That will help them with their hours of service, okay? When that product's ready, don't say, hey, be here at 10 when you know the product's not going to be ready until 4, okay? There may be another driver that's coming in the area that can pick it up at 4 versus that guy who now has to burn all of his hours from 10 to 4, okay? He'll pick up your load, then he's going to have to go to the next truck stop and take a break, okay? Unloading and loading, that's huge. You know, when you get to the constantine, make sure that if it's going to a nursery or if it's going to a job site, that there's somebody there to unload them in a timely manner. Communicate, if you can, what your sales forecasts are to your transportation providers. What markets are you going to be growing into, okay? Assist them with their planning of their capacity. There's only so much capacity, so we have to find a way to better utilize that capacity and make sure it's available for you when you need it. The O is overcome capacity obstacles, okay? Set up a dedicated pop-up fleet and or regional fleet, okay? A lot of carriers, especially your larger ones and your medium-sized trucking companies, have the ability to say, okay, you need 10 trucks for the next 3 months. Okay, here's the rate and we'll do this, okay? They'll dedicate the drivers, they'll find drivers who are either A, domiciled in your area, or they'll say you have a special assignment for the next 3 weeks and we're gonna rotate people in, okay? So you can do it that way. That can supplement what's out there on the spot market basis. Be prepared to see higher rates, and the best thing you can do is get with your sales force and start setting the expectation for your customers. I know that the industry that you guys are in has unfortunately become very commoditized, okay? And you know, people don't want to pay what the product is worth. As much of your costs are eaten up in transportation and packaging as they are in the actual product. I understand that, but we need to be able to communicate to your customers that it's not any better, okay? And it's only going to get worse, and costs are going to go up. We as consumers ultimately will pay that higher bill, okay? But your sales force needs to communicate that out to your customer base, what's going on in the transportation industry. Innovate, okay? We've always done it this way, so that's how we're going to do it. That's kind of the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same things over and over and expecting a different result. You're going to need to get a different result, okay? In years past, you could do it the same way all the time and get by and get through. You saw the numbers. We need 100,000 drivers over the next 10 years, okay? Where is that going to come from? It's not. So we have to figure out ways to make that happen. So we have to think outside the box a little bit and be a little bit more innovative. Collaborate with your transportation providers. Again, goes back to forecasting. If you call me on the Friday, you know, and say I need a truck and it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, that's not going to happen in most cases, especially Friday end of month, end of quarter. Okay, you're going to pay a lot for that. But if you knew on Tuesday or Wednesday that you had that, now you're talking. Some of the things that people understand on our industry is when capacity is available. Okay, a lot of shipments that we pick up Thursday and Friday, and even Saturday, deliver when? Monday morning, okay? When's the most capacity in the marketplace? Monday morning. Tell your salespeople, tell your customers, I can deliver to you Tuesday or Wednesday. I have trucks available that can pick up here Monday morning, okay? Then if the average length of haul is a little over 800 miles, when's the truck available next? Wednesday morning, okay? Wednesday morning, I have capacity available. If it's 500 miles or less, get that appointment for Tuesday and let them deliver that load Tuesday so we can have that capacity built. So Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays, we always have available capacity in our industry. Not always, but that's typically the way it works. Okay? So think about that when you're talking with your production crew and your customers. I have a better opportunity to pick up and deliver your freight on time if you can meet these, if you can change one day of your order cycle. Look for alternatives. Utilize the full service 3PLs, intermodal. Why? Because there's broader carrier base. Think about warehousing. You know, if you have product that you ship a long distance, could you warehouse that someplace closer where there's more capacity from a regional standpoint? Possibly. You know, again, does that add cost in the supply chain? Yes and no. If the product doesn't get delivered from A to B, it doesn't matter if you went from A to B and warehoused it and then tried to go to B from there. It's not going to happen. So those are just some things you can do on your end that will help us in our industry and hopefully keep your rates lower than there will be, okay? And again, I don't want to be doom and gloom, but I think everybody in the room needs to understand, and I think you went through it this past year. Rates this past year were significantly higher than they were the year before. Rates next year will be the same thing. No one's growing their fleets. We can't. We don't have enough drivers, okay? We have government regulations that are beating us down, so we've got to go through all that, okay? Those are the challenges that we face as an industry. So I kept it slightly under 3 hours and 30 minutes, so hopefully no one had to use the restroom too badly. But I'm very open to any questions that you may have. Again, yes?
Jeff, not to put you on the spot, what would you project from what you're hearing in the industry for flatbed and then van percent increase over the prior year spot rates?
What you're seeing in the spot rate market is probably on the flatbed side going to be 6 to 8, maybe 6 to 9% higher. It depends on the marketplace, obviously. I think on the van side, it's probably more like 5 to 7. If you look at what the carriers, you can go out. I would encourage this. Either get an RSS feed from Google or pull up some of the carriers that you commonly use. Look at the larger trucking companies. I get a feed from one of the analysts that follows the trucking industry, and you can see all the trucking companies will post what they expect to do from a rate increase. You can see what the shipping community is, and I guess I would flip that back to you. What did you see year over year from 2012 to 2000 or 2013 to 2014? About those same numbers, probably, maybe a little bit less.
Some lanes higher, some.
I can't say across the board, and again, every market's going to be a little bit different. I mean, if you have transportation or a facility in Florida, you're still sitting pretty good because outbound Florida is still one of the best areas to go. If any of you have the opportunity to purchase anything in Colorado, that's one of the biggest backhaul markets in the United States. I think you could find flatbed and dry van capacity in that marketplace. Yes, sir.
What's the chance of weight limits being
increased? There is legislation that they're looking at right now to increase either triples, triaxles, weight limits. The biggest hindrance that's out there right now is the infrastructure is so bad in the United States. Bridges, highways, and it's the proverbial NIMBY, not in my backyard. And I don't want to see an 80,000 gross vehicle weight truck going to 95 or 100, but it's there. A few years ago, the 57-foot trailer was something of interest, which, for a lot of your product, it might cube out before it weighs out. It really only gained traction here in the state of Texas. So it's out there. It's being considered. A lot of it is just going to come down to legislation, and as slow as that moves, it's probably not something you can expect the next 2 or 3 years, maybe 5 years down the road. Sir.
So are you saying that since there's a shortage of trucking, that there's a lot of freight in the United States that's literally not being moved?
It's being moved, but it's being moved a day later, 2 days later.
It's all late.
Everything is just, it's bogging down. And carriers are being more selective about the type of freight that they do. So you're seeing freight that maybe was hazardous before, chemicals of some sort that's not biohazardous, but it's hazardous. It's being pushed to different, there's specialty fleets just to handle that now, and they're paying those type of customers are paying a lot more for that type of transportation. I see a lot of similarities in between your industry and water. Okay, water, the product itself is relatively inexpensive. Okay, what are the two biggest costs? It's transportation and packaging, right? Same thing in your world. We talked about this at lunch. Is there any innovation in the mulch and soil industry and the packaging side to come up with different configurations outside of flatbed? Could you move it, could you come up with a larger Gaylord type container that goes, the slides in the back of a dry van? I don't know, but I think that's something that people need to look at. Walmart went to Procter & Gamble a few years ago and said, you need to change the way that your Tide detergent is packaged. We're losing cube in space. So now you bought Tide, now it's square. It's more square than it used to be. It used to be the small round jugs, right? Well, that was wasted space. Is there ways to be more innovative from a packaging side of things on your end? I don't know. But it's something to think about. It's hard.
Well, it's $372 billion. Why did you lobby so poorly about the, getting the rules?
Because we don't have Mr. Crow. You're exactly right. Because it's so fragmented.
Okay.
Because there's 450,000 trucking companies, and it's really supported by about 4,500. That's the biggest reason. You know, if you look at, of that 450,000 trucking companies, that might be an owner-operator with two trucks. He's not going to spend any time lobbying in Washington. He's not going to pay anything to be a part of that. The ATA can barely get their largest trucking companies to be members of the ATA to have any kind of lobbying power. So that's the biggest reason. Good question. Yes, sir.
Well, do you see self-driving trucks?
Do you see me driving a truck?
No, self-driving trucks.
Once you get to self-driving cars, that's going to be the next evolution. But until we figure out, honestly, how to teleport something like in Star Trek, there's going to be a need for transportation. I think in a very limited, strict operating area, you might be able to have that. But, you know, when you get outside of 25-mile radiuses, that's not going to be anything we can support at this point in time. I mean, you know, look at commuter trains and things like that. I mean, very few of those are even efficient at being, and they're very strategic in the lanes that they're performing that on there. So, eventually, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, absolutely. I mean, who would have thought you could take pictures on your phone and, you know, answer emails on your phone? So, as fast as technology is advancing, possible. Good question.
Any more?
The good news is I am not standing in your way for cocktail hour. That'd be the legal side of things. So, but again, I appreciate. I want to say thank you to the directors on the council, your leadership team, and more importantly, to you as members of the council for allowing me to come in here. Hopefully, you gained a little bit of insight. We can make this presentation available electronically if you'd like it. I think you can go through Bob, and we can distribute that out to you guys. Again, I think it's more important that you get that to the owners of your company, your customers, your sales force, to talk about what's really affecting them. Thank you very much.